Welcome to Desert Island Trek. Each week, we ask our guests to pick 8 items from Star Trek episodes, movies, and soundtracks to take with them to a desert island.
And our guest this week is the wonderful Matt Ferguson, who is from Sheffield in the United Kingdom. He's a graphic designer and poster artist in the film industry, and he describes himself as a massive nerd that gets to draw pictures of things he loves for a job. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Matt, I'm extremely jealous of the fact that that's what you get to do. Listen, I'm a learning development manager. Will you swap jobs by any chance? Like, it's good crack in the finance world. Like, I can happily swap over with you.
No.
Fair enough. You know, that's exactly what I said when you said the same thing to me.
Matt, how did you first get into Star Trek?
That would be when I was a little kid. So my parents are Trekkies, and they put on the original series of Star Trek when I was young. And then in 89 or 90, when TNG hit in the UK, I was just the right sort of age. I was like 7, 8 to really be affected by that. So I'd already watched a lot of the original series because of my mum and dad. They wanted to watch that. So that was on Wednesdays, I think. And that's what we used to do. So it was then, yeah. So TNG was the big one that was new for me.
So in terms of, say, your parents, who did your parents prefer as characters, Kirk or Spock?
That's a hard one. Both, probably. Can you say both?
No, you can't.
They don't exist without each other, though, do they? So they come as a package with bones. So
one liked Spock, one liked Kirk. There you go, problem solved.
Yeah, I think that they come as a package.
So was it on BBC Two then that you would have been watching the original?
6 o'clock, yeah. I think it was 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. That's what I remember.
I was going, there's a Twitter page out there that does, he actually takes photos of like the cheapers, what's the TV guide in the UK called again? The Radio Times, is it?
Yeah.
Radio Times, yeah.
And he actually puts up like, you know, this day in 1997. And I always, if it says Wednesday or Thursday, I immediately jump to it to see what episodes of, say, Star Trek The Next Generation on a Wednesday, DS9 of a Thursday. And the original series then was on Sunday mornings at 12 o'clock then as well. Mm. Like, so
yeah, I think no one was watching television at that time, which is why it was on.
So Matt, if you were stuck on a desert island, what would be the first thing from Star Trek that you would bring with you?
If I remember correctly, because this was obviously pre-asked, would be the motion picture at the moment. That would be the first thing.
Why did you pick that?
Because that was obviously the first Star Trek movie that I watched, because we watched them in order. And when you've gone from the original series, where it is literally sort of ships on strings and just the expansive, I can remember just being absolutely blown away, probably more blown away by that visual of the Enterprise and everything than Star Wars at the time for me. It's that kind of level, isn't it? It just took to that hyper level. And then obviously now there's the director's edition, and I think that just improves that film immeasurably. And it's my second favorite Star Trek movie now. So
when you were watching when you were a kid, did you kind of feel like, because I remember myself when I watched it when I was younger, I was there going, my God, this movie's so boring. And I found it hard to get into it. Now, my appreciation has extremely increased over the years. But did it hit you straight away when you saw it the first time?
Yeah.
Or did it take a while to kind of get into it?
It hit me straight away. But like, I've got a father who used to just think it was an education to show us all sorts of really boring films. So one, when there's space, it was like, yeah. So, you know, that and 2001 were ones that stuck out, because it was like, oh, this space is awesome. Plus, because he used to like showing us Hitchcock movies and things like that, which are great when you're an adult, but for like a 7-year-old or
whatever, a bit heavy for a 7-year-old,
you just don't get it. Northwest, I remember him putting that on and me just being like, okay.
Not getting it at all. It's one of those things, isn't it? I think that, Matt, your household is probably similar to mine. Like, because of the fact that you probably had just one TV, whatever your parents watched, you were watching, irrespective of if it was kind of, you know, for you or not, kind of thing.
Yeah. Lots of Antiques Roadshow, to be honest.
Oh, every Sunday.
Yeah.
Bloody Antiques Roadshow.
how dare you insult Antiques Roadshow on this program?
Now I'm at the age where I'm starting to enjoy it myself. I'm like,
oh, yes,
let's see how terrible much this appraisal is worth.
think you know you've gotten old in your life when you're kind of watching those things going, I can't wait to watch that this evening. Now have the dinner in front of me, just sit down and enjoy that.
Do you find you get that with Countryfile though? Like as a kid, watching Countryfile was the most boring thing, but now it's actually really interesting.
You need to find out about the farms and stuff.
It's great.
There's a similar show over here in Ireland called Nationwide. It's on Monday, Wednesdays and Fridays at 7 o'clock, and like by God, I won't miss it anymore. Like when I was a kid, I was there going, who watches this shite now? Isn't there? Oh lovely, where are they going this week? What are they going to go see?
True though, like as you grow up you think your tastes change, so I do appreciate the motion picture more even than when I was, because when I was a kid it was just the visuals and the awesome VJ stuff, but now I kind of like the themes that run through it and like what makes a person and all that sort of stuff, which is really interesting stuff.
And I think one of the great things about it is that like because the jump forward from like 10 years since the end of the original series is that they did it so well with the relationship between Kirk, Spock and Bones. Like it's not the same, and it's got
to warm up as the film goes on. It warms up and by the end it's them again, and I think that's brilliant. And I can see how a lot of people would have been turned off by that because they want that straight away.
Yeah.
But then if you get rewarded by the end, I think, for investing time in the movie with them being them again. I mean, Disco Bones, when he first shows up, they make it clear he's been doing things. So, you know.
And that scene, like when the three of them come together for the first time in the room, like you can see Kirk and Bones are starting to kind of get back to normal. But like Spock is there going like, oh, God, humans again. I thought I got away from these people. And it's just so awkward. And again, as you said, like growing up, I was there going, but why isn't it the same straight away? But then when you get older, you kind of appreciate, oh, wow, they nailed this. It really kind of watching it actually grow and develop, and the whole movie is about a sense of, you know, where do you belong, like who are your people and things like that.
Oops. I agree.
Do you know what, I love this next one. I'm really intrigued to know why. What is the second item that you would bring to the desert island?
I'm gonna go ahead and say that would be Spock's brain.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Mike, you do realize you skipped a question, right?
What?
Yeah, I know, but I want to know the answer to this one.
Okay. Well, so you want to know why Spock's brain?
Yeah. I'm really fascinated to know why Spock's brain.
Because people hate it, so then that makes me automatically like it. Also, on top of that, it's good to have a laugh if you're on a desert island, isn't it? And that is a laugh, that episode.
So, okay, but if you were to physically have his brain, would you want it instead of your brain? Or
we're talking about physically and not the episode.
Yeah, no, I understand it's the episode. But I'm also wondering, would you also want it as a physical item?
Like in a jar?
Yeah, or in replace of your own brain.
If it could... my own brain was Spock's brain.
Yeah.
This is... I don't know. I'm
chaos. I don't know. When you read the sheet and it just says Spock's brain, it could be any number of things. It could be the episode. It could be
the brain in a jar. Yeah,
that's brain true. In
or
jar,
I could have his brain. So my face, but with Spock's brain in it.
Yeah,
like they do in the episode, they take his brain out and they, you know,
exactly
controls the city with his own brain.
Yeah,
very Sorry, much man. The same as his body. You know,
would you want your brain in his body?
I would go. If I could still have my brain as well, and there was the two brains, that'd be interesting. Hybrid brain. Wouldn't it? Yeah.
This is like the Steve Martin movie, The Man with Two Brains.
Exactly that. The brain in a gorilla.
Yeah. This episode has taken a very strange twist.
Basically, now I'll get back to schedule. I think it sparks conversation, so that's why I chose it. But also, because it's one of those maligned things that people say is terrible, and you know it's not, it's just silly. It's a goofy 60s TV show, and people need to remember that about Star Trek to also sometimes just relax and have fun with it, and it doesn't matter too much.
And I think
something different to what they're expecting.
Exactly.
Even with Spock's brain, as absolutely ridiculous as it is, like what was always great about those episodes is like how straight everybody played it. Like,
it's incredible when they're remote controlling him around. Nimoy is just.
I tell you,
it's
you know
genius. It's a work of art. That's why.
That reminds me of that DS9 episode where they have to go and get Moogie from Empak Nord.
Oh, and they kill the
and they
the
kill
water
the
guy.
Water, yeah. And they use the brain probes to radio control him. And they get stuck on the bulkhead. Just...
And he's like walking into a wall, and they're like, "What's wrong with him?"
It gets me every time. Okay, now we've had that answer. So I'm now going to go back to schedule, I promise. So if you had to pick an era of Star Trek or a Star Trek, Starship or Space Station to live in or on, what would it be?
I would have said the Enterprise D, probably. If I didn't say that then, when I answered originally, that's what I'm saying now, Enterprise D.
Why?
Because it's the one where you want to live. They've got carpets. We've got nice rooms, nice beds with silky, weird, shiny sheets and stuff. It was when they had the replicators for the first time, so the stuff just came out holes in the wall, and I'd just, you know, wouldn't you just go wild, just ordering whatever food you wanted?
Yeah, but you'd probably...
It's incredible that they're all fat, but then again, I always wondered that about the replicas. Does it give you, like a giant chocolate sundae, but it's actually got nutritional value with its... good for you.
Polystyrene, yeah.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? So, like, it doesn't matter what it looks like or tastes like, it's still nutritionally good.
I mean, I suppose it is just recycled shit, I suppose. So, I mean...
So, it might be like a giant burger, but it's actually full of...
Well, things five because, calories and 90...
Yeah. Because none of them are fat in the future, or, like... well, I say that, some are. Well, do you know what I mean? It's a very sterile vision of the future in some ways, but also when you're a kid, you just wanted to live there.
What's the first thing you'd want to replicate if you were there?
Well, I like a burger, just to see. Probably just want to count a burger, both. Please. Yeah.
Wait a second. What brand of burger are we talking here?
Burger's just, a burger.
It's not a burger. Rustler's burger is different to a normal burger, Mike.
There's a burger joint near me called Slap and Pickle, which is a really good American style burger, which I would go for.
Did you say Slap and Pickle?
Slap and Pickle, huh?
Not Slap and Tickle.
That's a good name.
Anyway, Enterprise D was, well, obviously that was like my favorite Star Trek show, still is, I think. And I love one of the things I love most about Star Trek, every version of it, to some degree, you want to sort of live there. It's like, although I love Star Wars just as much for different reasons, you wouldn't want to live on Tatooine. And Anakin doesn't even want to live on Tatooine. Luke can't get out there quick enough. It's where they always are. You don't want to be there. Whereas Star Trek, it's a place where you want to be. I would love to go visit like the headquarters in San Francisco. I always wished it was real. So, and the Enterprise is like a...
And let's face
when
it,
you're a kid, you see kids on that one as well.
Exactly.
There's families living on that trip. So it just feels like somewhere where you could live.
And let's face it, you only want to be in the Star Wars universe for a lightsaber.
I'll take a lightsaber, yeah.
So what you're saying is you wouldn't live on Kirk's original Enterprise, where the chances of you like being murdered, killed, or like vaporized by some weird ass alien, no?
Yeah, no, but that only happens, what is it? How many episodes is there? 68 episodes or something? I can't remember. Was it more than that?
About 79.
Right, well, there you go. 79 episodes. That only happens 79 times, days, out of 5 years. The rest of the time, they're just chilling. Think about it like that.
Like, when you look back in the original series, like, by and large, it's almost like a horror show because, like, no matter where they go, someone's going to get killed in some shape or form, like, by some...
Just don't wear a red shirt and you're fine.
Oh, no, the red shirts, like, even at that, there was, like, you could wear blue or gold and you still didn't have a chance, like, that was the great thing about it, like, and every week it was there, someone's going to get killed and it's going to be really bizarre how it happens.
Your name isn't in the credits at the beginning in space, then you should be worried, basically. Yeah, the guest actor, aren't they?
Matt, who is your favorite character in all of Star Trek?
Captain Kirk.
Is that Captain Kirk we see in the background there?
Yeah. I hit him earlier because he was breaking the webcam because it wanted to focus on him. That's like circa 1988 or whatever, isn't it?
Oh, hang on a second. Is that the generation standee, actually?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because his hair is much darker in Star Trek 5.
No, he's bigger than that. Isn't he? No, that It could be, you know.
I'm sure that's the generations when I'm nearly certain it is.
You know, when I was young, I always thought Captain Kirk was really old. Even in the original series, I thought he was old. And then as I've got older, I think he's very young and always like so full of life. And he's like 60 or something by generations, isn't he? Or older. And he's jumping around, jumping off of bridges and decking Clockwork Orange in the face. Can't remember his name.
We'll just go with that. Clockwork Orange sounds better as a bag.
You know?
But wasn't it
so much energy? It's incredible. Captain Kirk is my favorite, definitely. Yeah.
In The Wrath of Khan, wasn't he? Is it 50. He was? Yeah, 50. So that means then that's so 16 years after it started the original series. So doing that 34 then in the original series in season one. Like, yeah. So that means like by the end of season three, he was only like 37, 38. Jeepers above. In terms of, say, look, you say Captain Kirk. Obviously, it's Shatner's Kirk, right? Not Chris Pine.
No, I like Pines as well. Yep.
What about the character is it exactly that appeals to you?
Like his confidence and like his sort of willingness to, as a character, to dare to do things. It's like in Star Trek V, he just wants to climb that mountain. And I like that. I just like it, like as a kid, it's nice to see somebody who's just willing to risk and take a chance and then usually win, which is why the few times he doesn't win, it's very impactful.
I think as well, Shatner really did kind of bring the series forward into the movies, like with the movies all primarily focused on him as a hero.
Oh, yeah, he's such a movie star in those films. People seem to forget because obviously there's the sort of funny side of William Shatner and people, it's easy to sort of lampoon the way he acts and stuff. But he, like recently for my birthday, we hired out cinema and we put on the motion picture. That was it. And he's just magnetic, especially on the big screen. He's incredible. He's very charismatic individual. So
you're very much drawn, like in all seven movies, you're very much just drawn to him. And yeah, like, as you said, like, the hero's journey in those movies has always been like, how much can he take? And it's always him, like, and he did it so bloody well. Like, Matt, what is the next choice for something you'd bring to the desert island? And if you've forgotten, I'll give you
a hint. Is it an episode of TNG? Is it Reunion?
It is, yeah.
Yes, exactly it, yes.
Good one.
Why did you pick Reunion? Because, like, there's 178 episodes of The Next Generation. You've picked Reunion. Why that above all else?
It's the one that, so obviously you would then would want more ones with Worf after that, but it's that one where Worf really became like a real sort of awesome character for me. The whole thing with Duras, it's just, and like in Star Trek Next Generation, up until that point, you've not really had stuff like that where he just straight up murders him. It's weird that he only gets like a slap on the hand at the end for doing it. They're like, oh, that's going on your record. It's like, I did murder him. But
can't be doing that, Worf.
You've been bad at school, to the naughty corner. Yeah.
But it's just, and so the Klingon episodes, of which a lot of them were Ronald D. Moore, I think, the like level of drama and the whole Klingon High Council stuff, and that sort of fleshes out Klingon society so much that it then feeds back the past Star Trek as well, and the Klingons become like this really real sort of civilization through that character Worf. I just think that's brilliant, and he just shoots off after that episode. I think Worf as a character, before that he was just the grumpy guy that would say something and they'd ignore. I mean, they still do that a lot. They'll say, oh, we need to shoot them, and they go, shut up Worf, we're not doing that, in so many episodes.
I think I saw there was a supercut on YouTube of basically every time Worf made a suggestion and he was shot down. Like, he'd be inside the briefing room and he'd say something to be going, why?
Sometimes he's right as well. Sometimes like, yeah, that's the sensible thing to do. Why are you listening to it?
It's like in, although in fairness, leading up to that as well, I remember when in the episode, the enemy, when the Romulan is on the Enterprise, and the only person who can give him a blood transfusion is Worf. Right, and I remember reading that kind of when they were talking with the writer's room, and they were trying to figure a way, like, how do we make him give the blood? And then suddenly someone said, what happens if we don't? What happens if Worf just refuses? And they're going, oh God, can we do it? Like, and when Michael Dorn said he read the script, he was so shocked that they'd kind of committed to not, you know, can basically Worf saying, fuck you, like, I'm not going to give this guy my blood under any kind of circumstances.
Yeah.
And it's great when he kills Duras as well, that Riker is roaring at him as he just comes in the door when he just wallops the batlet straight into Duras's chest, yeah. Like, oh God, glorious stuff.
Very good.
So what is your favorite series?
Of Star Trek?
Yeah.
No, of Star Wars.
Clone Wars, no.
I will have said TNG probably. I think I already just said that earlier. Probably Star Trek to TNG. Did I say the original series? What did I say?
You didn't. So we don't ask questions. We don't ask for answers on these questions.
We don't ask questions.
So you don't know the answer?
No.
TNG then.
TNG.
The only thing you had to complete from us, Matt, was describing yourself and then the 8 items that you'd bring. The rest of it then was all totally going to be news to us.
Look, you have to hold my hand with this situation.
If anyone is going to be employing Matt's services in future, he's not that disorganized. Okay, this is totally
pretty awful. I'm pretty bad. TNG, yeah, it's by a long way.
By a long way, like again,
a long way.
Even more than the original series.
Yeah.
Even when you add in the movies.
Yeah.
Really, that's really
the one that I rewatch the most is TNG, I think.
What kind of seasons or episode would you gravitate towards then if you do watch it? What do you, like, if you just sit down and say, John, I'm just going to try an episode here in the background because I'm here. I just put it on. Which one do you?
Midway, so like 4 or 5.
4 or 5, yeah.
Yeah. And they were really hitting their stride. And there was just so many really, really good episodes. Even the bad ones I like, though. It's a bit like the Spock's brain situation. I like the bad ones. I can watch the one with the sexy ghost. I can watch that.
God, the fuck! I hate that episode.
I can watch it. I've watched it so many times.
It's one of those few episodes that I would genuinely just skip. No,
it's so bizarre. There's like a weird sort of, is it a Scottish planet that they go to?
Yeah, your man's there with the kilt and the bagpipes. So weird, like,
it's not on Earth. It's just a weird, ancient,
weird little bonny planet, Scottish
17th century Scottish planet where her mum lives with the sexy ghost.
So what are some of the other bad episodes that you absolutely adore of The Next Generation?
That Skin of Evil, I always like that one. Because it affected me as a child, it freaked me out. And it's not very good. But I like it.
When we did our Next Generation season 1 recap, I watched it as one of my favorite 5 episodes. And I was actually struck by, as much as it's remembered as like Tasha Yar getting murdered by the oil slick, I thought it was a great episode for Picard because, you know, the magnificent speech he gives at the end of it. Like, but it does take a good while to kind of get going at the same
time. Yeah. So, I don't like picking out bad ones, to be honest, because like I like them as well. I don't like them all.
Trek is Trek. Yep.
Yeah.
No, fair enough. I get that one. But there's still the odd few that I have to skip. So, what is the 4th item that you would bring onto the desert island?
Can you remind me? Wrath of Khan. I would bring on the Wrath of Khan to my desert island. Yeah, that movie there.
This is turning into like a game show. Matt is kind of asking, just give me a hint. Give me a hint. Is it a movie? Is it a TV? Is it an episode?
It's charades.
Can you tell me through interpretive dance which one I picked next in this situation?
Yeah, Wrath Khan. You probably know why.
But Matt, the great thing about having spoken to you is your perspective is unique, which is exactly magnificent. So, okay, tell me your favorite scene from the Wrath of Khan.
Ooh. Favorite scene?
Oh, he has to actually stroke the beard for that one even. Look at that.
The one that sort of sticks out recently on recent rewatch is in Kirk's apartment with Bones when he's like saying how he's fed up, basically, worn out. That's a really good scene. So that sticks out.
Do you know my favourite from Wrath of Khan?
Yeah. Oh. Go on.
I have the pop vinyl.
Oh, that bit, yeah.
That is still my favourite scene. I know it's so cliche.
The other bit that gets me more than that See, that's the emotional bit. People cry. Or the funeral. They cry. No, what gets me crying now is the scene after with David when he says he's proud of him. Because obviously up until that point, he's just like, oh, I hate him, rubbish. But then he's like, I know, my dad's really good, actually. Even though he's not been a very good dad, he's a good person. Like, and it's very, very emotional, that bit, I think.
My favorite thing is Kirk's kind of monologue to Carol when he talks about, like, basically, you know, there's a man out there I haven't seen in 15 years who's trying to kill me. And it's the way he just kind of deconstructs his life over the last couple of years and basically says, like, you know, I feel old and worn out. And
worn out, just, yeah.
It's so brilliant, like, because you're just not expecting this in this movie, like, this for the hero to basically say, like, I just feel old and I don't know if I can actually do this, like, and it's...
Yeah, but then he says he feels young at the end, so it's kind of like... character arc, good, yeah.
And, like, do you remember when you were young kind of watching it, like, in comparison, say, the motion picture, did you kind of say to yourself, Jesus Christ, this is actually so much better than the other one, or were you there going... do you know what? They're different, but I enjoy them just as much.
I remember it was more scary when I was young. I remember being more scared. And it's obviously more action-packed, so there's much more jeopardy. It doesn't feel that different. It never felt that different to me.
Yeah.
Star Trek 3 feels more different than that one. Star Trek 3 was like a real expansive change in direction, I think, that lots of people then put back onto Star Trek 2. The amount of people that think Space Dock is in Star Trek 2, for example. Mm. I'm like, what? No, all those incredible visuals are actually in Star Trek 3. Star Trek 3, like the Klingon Bird of Prey, which is just like so iconic. Anyway, we're not talking about that because the one I chose was Star Trek 2 because it's actually a better film. Star Trek 2 is just a brilliant film. It's not you can have those sort of fan films where you're a fan of the thing and you go, that's the best film in that series, because I'm a fan of that thing. But Star Trek 2 is actually just one of the best science fiction films outright ever.
It's interesting.
Should be up there with your Blade Runners and 2001s and films like that, I think. But I think it's because it's quite scrappy and low budget that people probably aren't Star Trek fans anyway.
It's a couple of years ago, I remember in Empire magazine, this could be like 20 years ago for all I bloody remember, and people were ranking, like, I know, the 100 best movies of all time, and they had some directors putting in their top 10, and like a load of them had The Wrath of Khan in their top 10, but in the actual list that Empire had, The Wrath of Khan wasn't even in the top 100. Like, there was no...
because it's not cool to like Star Trek. Yeah. But then again, this is the story of my life. As soon as people say, that's not cool, you shouldn't like that, I instantly want to like it more. Yeah. I'm like, oh, why not?
Yeah.
Okay. Give me a reason. There's no good reason. I'm going to like it more.
Matt, the next question we have, which will kind of probably be answered by one of the things you're bringing to the desert island for you, which is your favorite Star Trek movie?
Star Trek 2, was it? Yeah.
No, you didn't give us an answer.
Just said it.
No.
Let's face it, there's a lot of overlap between these questions and these things.
Star Trek 2 is my favourite, I think.
Show was last seen jumping out of a window.
Matt, what is the fifth choice in terms of what you bring to the island with you? And if you can't remember it, Mike will interpretively dance.
It's gone now because this whole conversation's just gone south, so I have no idea what I said.
Devil in the Dark.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Brilliant.
You're reacting in total disbelief.
I never mind, made a good choice there. I would really want that on a desert disc.
Desert Island Trek, Matt. We don't want to get copyright claimed for what you just said there.
Desert Island Wars doesn't really have the same ring to it.
You gotta have an original series episode with you, because obviously that's where it all started. So yeah. And that's the one I think that I would pick.
And why would you pick it, Matt?
Because it's good. yeah. No, honestly though. It's another one of those where it's got slightly different production values to a lot of the other episodes, and it's a different kind of story as well. And then I just always like the message of, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, basically. That's the central theme to that one. It's not a monster. It's just a mum trying to protect her babies. It's really good. So it's just a nice watch. It's a really good, tight episode as well. It's like just really solidly put together, I think.
It's a perfect example of the original series just taking the current situation and kind of putting a kind of a futuristic yeah. spin on it and just exposing kind of different people's kind of prejudices and all yeah. that kind of thing. Like, and just all the performances are so good. Like, all the way that, like, Kirk just does not give a damn what the miners want in terms of just murder. He's there going, yeah, no, that's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
And like Spock, and one of the great things about the episode is the fact that, I say it's a great thing. It's not a great thing. William Shatner's father died during the production of it. And he had to, like, he was going to leave early, but he stayed to kind of perform more of the scenes so that they wouldn't kind of lose the kind of the time and all that kind of thing. Like, and so you add things into that to the performance yeah. he has in it. It's such a brilliant episode.
It's quite a lot of body doubles in that one, isn't there, of Shatner as well, because of that thing. Well, it's over the shoulder shots.
Yeah, I think they did a lot of filling.
Yeah. But then again, that creates different sort of creative choices and stuff. Anything that where there's constraints, I always think leads to a better end product. It's a bit like the Wrath of Khan before, where they obviously slashed the budget right down. They were like, we'll let the TV department do it. You know, we'll get this untested guy to write the script while he's on a plane or whatever he did it like in 12 hours or something. And it turned out to be amazing, because sometimes it's good to be, if you have all of the resources, then it can get away from you, I think. So.
I think that's a Nick Myers thing, but throughout the comments, that because he was restrained in what he could do, he had to be more creative as a result with exactly. what he was limited in kind of having. Like, what you were talking about, the body doubles with Shatner, every time I think of like the hilarious stunt doubles in those episodes of the original series, all I can think of is that episode of Family Guy where the nerd in the class's dissertation is a video showing the fight scene in one of the episodes, and it shows there's Kirk, there's a stunt double, there's Kirk again, there's Shatner, there's a stunt double, there's Shatner, but in the background you can see the stunt double's coffee mug.
they're always the maligned ones, the ones in the original series, but in TNG, whenever they body double Patrick Stewart, for example, it's like, who is that man with a bald cap on? It's like, they even get somebody with the same build. I was just like, on a small TV. See, that's the thing people get on a small TV when we originally watch these things.
Yeah,
you get away with that, and then but now when you watch
now it they've HD, remastered in 1080, you see every detail,
everything. You see all the black paper stuck up on the monitors and stuff, and it's like, I saw that before. It's just bits of paper stuck up on there.
Yeah. You can see as well the little marks on the ground for like where they had to stand yeah. for certain scenes and all that kind of thing. Yep. And like, that's glorious to see that kind of level of detail inside there as well.
Just shows that the detail was originally there, just the technology was not around to bring it out. So we've already covered this question already, but I'm going to put a slight spin on it. You cannot say an episode that you have already talked about. What is your favorite episode?
From all of Star Trek before you ask.
Star Trek, with the exception of an episode, you can't mention an episode we've mentioned already.
Let's out like a different TV series then. So let's screw off TNG and that rubbish original series. Forget them.
Okay. So Discovery, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, Prodigy, DS9, and
Lower Decks. Enterprise. DS9. Let's go for DS9, and we'll go for the one where O'Brien has to like live a life in a prison, but it's like all just in his mind. That one's a good one episode. Because anytime it's an O'Brien story, they just mistreated him so horribly. He had the worst time.
Confined to a single room. He was never allowed to leave it, and now he's in DS9. He's literally got the short straw in him.
Yeah,
poor Conway.
Hard Time, I think it's called.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Good one. He ends up killing the fella,
yeah,
doesn't he?
He does indeed. So, what is the sixth item that you will bring to the desert island? It is a TNG movie. I'll give you that.
Well, hang on. Hang on, I paused there completely for a second. Did you notice that?
I did notice.
It's fine. I can make that. I can fix that.
No, because I was about to talk about the episode of DS9, but fine, you clearly just beckoned me behind. That's
okay, go on.
Fine.
Say what you were going to say. It's a good episode.
Too late. Too late.
It's just the one that popped into my mind. It's not even the best episode of DS9.
So, okay, hang on a second.
Because it's O'Brien, because it's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, he said. And the end of the episode is him trying to kill himself in the cargo bay.
It's not funny, but it is funny because of what they just always do to O'Brien. It's just horrible things to this poor man. There's that one where he ends up replacing himself because he's like jumping forward or backwards in time and he gets sick and then he dies. And the other version comes back and it's him and he's just like, am I even myself anymore?
It's not that visionary, I think that one's called.
Oh,
so hang on a second, right? So clearly you enjoy O'Brien Must Suffer episodes, which is great, which you find remarkably hilarious. Like, I'd say, like, if you called over to Matt's house of a Saturday night a year ago, we're going to watch some really hilarious episodes of Star Trek. Anyway, here's O'Brien suffering PTSD from being in jail for 20 years. Look at him here in the cargo bay getting ready to kill himself. Hilarious. So wait a second. What is the best episode of DS9 for you then, Matt?
That's the one with Jake when... he loses Cisco and he gets old and he turns into Tony Todd and then he gets visited. Is it called The Visitor?
Yes.
Mike, I've got a new segment for the show, right? We're going to get Matt to describe episodes of Star Trek season by season in Matt's own inimitable way without knowing the name of the episode to see if you can guess what it is. It won't be in order. You've got to guess what the episode actually is.
It's like charades on steroids. Yeah.
Anytime they play with the format and they do something different, I just love. And I like episodic TV.
Yeah.
So that's a self-contained story. It's brilliant.
Matt, in terms of, say, Star Trek as a whole, then, what moment defines all of Star Trek for you?
Ooh.
Star Trek 3. This is, again, just what pops into my head. When Captain Kirk's had enough of Christopher Lloyd and he kicks him in the head and he falls in the lava. Says, I have had enough of you. Brilliant. That bit.
Most people pick, like, you know, a Picard speech or something. No, Matt, sir, fuck that. Kirk,
can you turn that scene into a poster?
The best.
Do you notice as well, since film 4 started showing the Star Trek movies, whenever they show that scene, they actually cut out that line of dialogue. So yeah, Kirk's first kick actually sends him straight off the cliff. They ditch the full line, which is a disgrace because it's glorious. Like, there's no curse words inside there. He's just beating him up.
Just had enough of him. Just a jerk for no reason, though. Christopher Lloyd is just such a jerk in that movie for no reason. Other than he wants Genesis, he's just being greedy sod. He's had enough of him. He's tried to be nice.
Matt, when you watch that movie back, do you get off your couch and start cheering the second he kicks on? Go, that's right. Yeah, having that.
There's party poppers and confetti and everything. Yeah.
Let's celebrate by watching Cotamini have a bad day yet again. That's Christmas morning in the Ferguson household.
I just got to say what pops into my head. That's what popped into my head.
Right, we're going to move on. What is the sixth thing that you would bring with you to the desert island? It's a TNG movie.
Don't give any hints, Mike. We have to. It's actually first, funnier seeing Matt figure it out himself.
First contact, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In it. Why first contact, Matt?
Oh, yeah, that was the second one I saw in cinemas. First one was Generations. And it was a really good film in the cinema. So it's just a good action movie. Some people might think it's not a very good Star Trek movie. I'm not so sure about that. I think it's got some very good themes. It's more of a human level story of Star Trek because a lot of the times they're larger than life, aren't they?
Yeah.
But it's much more in line with some of the older Shatner era stuff where it's character driven, if you know what I mean. So it doesn't feel as TNG, it's not preachy.
Yeah.
But it's about Patrick Stewart coming to terms. not Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard, coming to terms with what happened to him when he was that Locutus.
And do you find over the years as you watched it, do you feel it still stands up, has gotten better, or is not as good as when you watched it when you were, say, from 96 when it was in the cinema?
I think I like some, I like other Star Treks more. I like, I think I actually do like Generations more, and I think I like Insurrection more. Don't like Nemesis more. But if as a standalone movie, as like a really good action movie, it's probably the best directed one outside of The Wrath of Khan. It's got some incredible action sequences.
It's and that shot very Enterprise-y.
It's so accessible as well. Like it's a bit like it's like Wrath of Khan crossed with The Voyage Home, because it's accessible. Like The Voyage Home was, you don't have to be a Star Trek fan to be able to watch that and get it. So it's one, if you wanted to just sort of say, Star Trek's all right, put that on. And then people would be like, you would think, oh, that is quite a good movie, actually. Yeah.
Who used to host The Big Breakfast again? Johnny, what was his surname?
Don't know.
The Big Breakfast?
Yeah, it was in Channel 4. Do you not remember The Big Breakfast?
Johnny Vegas?
No, that was the first thing that popped my head as well. No, what the hell was his name again? Sorry, there is a point. I am actually going somewhere with
Johnny
this.
Vaughan.
Johnny Vegas is that comedian. Funny guy.
I was going to say, Johnny Vegas would be brilliant.
I don't know if you know this, but you do now. I'm not very good with names.
All right,
I met Johnny Vegas once, actually.
Sorry, Johnny Vaughan used to host a movie review show at the time, and the gimmick was, I think he used to bring on just random people, like not celebrities, just like fucking, I don't know, people he just pulled off the street or something. And they'd watch the movie with him. And when they reviewed First Contact, these people clearly didn't actually understand the concept of the Borg, because they were there going, don't really get it. Like, they're not really scary. They just kind of walk around like this. Ooh.
They used to be people. They used to be people.
But these people didn't know that, Matt. That's the
kind of... Says it in the movie. Says it. Wait a minute, it starts with Patrick as a Borg, and then they're like, he used to be one of them. That's why he's not allowed to fight them.
There's also that bit when they're on the holodeck and he's ripping that chest panel apart and there's a comm badge there. It's like,
says Ensign Lynch.
He was a member of your crew.
Ensign Lynch, yeah.
Yeah, Ensign Lynch.
Matt, what you need to do is you need to build a time machine. Go back, find that episode of Johnny Vaughan's movie review show and find that guy who said it and say, listen here, buddy, this is what's going on.
It's a really good movie.
It is a good movie.
Matt, we've kind of we've completely thrown the schedule out the window, which is absolutely fantastic. Seventh choice, what is it? Mike, don't give him any hints.
Can't remember.
It's an episode.
Data's Day was one I picked.
Yes. That?
Yeah, there we go. That's one. Very good. I love Data episodes because they're good. Right. And that one, I like, again, it goes against the grain because there's no sort of adversary. There's no sort of real problem for them to overcome. There's the boring thing with the
Vulcan / Romulan person.
Yeah. But that's the B plot. That would usually be the A plot, probably.
Yeah.
And then Data's thing, just trying to get ready for the wedding, would be the B plot. But they make that the A plot, and it's just playing with what they usually do, so then it just feels different and fun. And anytime Data is trying to fit in or be more human is always good, so it's just great.
The thing that always gets me with that episode is you got that scene with Data and Crusher dancing. Yeah. I swear that holodeck house is the house from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, because it's got the same horrible pink walls. The same, well, I think it's either the same or a very similar, like, patio probably door. Is, yeah. You just, every single time I see it, I just instantly think Fresh Prince. I don't know why.
There's a great scene at the end of Data's Day that no one ever really talks about. It's Data goes into sickbay and Picard is there with the Juarez child who was just born, because it's referenced in one of Data's logs or whatever. And Picard is kind of standing there, and because, like, you know, Picard is not a man like for children, all this kind of thing. And he just says, like, you know, while we were facing destruction, this little miracle was being born.
Yeah.
And it's just so brilliant. And it's just this wonderful way to kind of, because again, it's just Data has experienced this. No one else is going to know that this has happened, been shown a softer side to Picard. There's another great line as well when Riker and Data are in the ready room and the Vulcan ambassador basically tells them to get lost. And they come out the door and Riker says to Data, "Charming woman." And then Data's voiceover. The tone of Commander Riker's voice indicates to me that he is not sincere in his belief that she is charming.
I like the little nugget that it's Maddox that he's sending the letters to, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
Somebody who tried to have him turned off.
Yeah.
And I just think, I know he's not got any emotion or blah, 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 but I just like that Data's just willing to do that still and not be like, screw you, you tried to take me apart. Because he doesn't have the emotion, so I get it. But also, just in terms of character, it's one of those Dataisms that's just.
And I think nice. It's one of Data's most endearing qualities is the fact that he's still willing to work with Maddox, even though essentially Maddox wanted him killed, in no better sense of a term.
Yeah,
you know. So I think that's one of Data's most endearing qualities.
I agree.
Matt, tell us a bit about your work and your website and things like that. This is not a Star Trek question, I might add. This is genuinely now about you and your work.
I can talk about a bit of Star Trek because I do some Star Trek work. I make movie posters for films, isn't it?
How did you start kind of coming about it and things like that?
Around about, I always say 10 years ago, but it might be a bit longer now because time has moved on. 13 years ago. Around about 13 years ago, I was just doing bits of art for myself and stuff. And I made a picture for my wife that her sister was like, "You made that. That's really good. You should do that more properly." So I was like, okay. So I did some more. And then there was in Empire magazine, there used to be these little, every month, there was the alternative movie poster by Ollie Moss that they used to do. I used to think that's quite cool. I could do that because it's minimalist, quick. So then I did one for the Avengers when that was coming out. So that would have been in 2011, just before it came out, the first Avengers movie. And for some magical reason, Mark Ruffalo or Mark Ruffalo's assistant emailed me and said, "Mark Ruffalo's seen that. He would like a copy." This is while they were making the movie, I guess. And I was like, okay. sent it on, and then it must have gone round the houses or whatever. So then they contacted me and said, "Do you want to do some artwork for the box set that's coming out? We're doing a big box set of all the movies up to this point." I was like, "Yeah." So then my first proper job doing this, I was still working in a shop at the time, was doing the Avengers. And then 2 years later, I did Guardians of the Galaxy and did like 10 posters for that. And I was at the premiere and all that crazy stuff, and not stopped since. So I just fell straight into it.
Matt, you explain this like it's like water off a duck's back. You're just kind of going, "Well, working in a shop, drew a couple of pictures, was invited to a film premiere in London, but you know, whatever."
That's just what happened. I'm very lucky.
Do you ever pinch yourself and say, "How in the name of God am I actually doing this still?"
Yeah, especially when I'm doing stuff like Transformers anniversary artwork for like my favorite thing, or Star Trek artwork.
Yeah,
I'm like, working with people like Drew Struzan, who did like a lot of the old classic posters, and then working with Bob Peake's estate remastering all the Star Trek posters at the moment. I'm just like, just get on with it, because I think about it too much and my brain would probably explode.
We were actually trying to get Drew for the show, actually, but as people told us that he's retired completely.
He is retired, yeah. So when we do stuff with him, it's through like agents, and there's like a gallery that has all his artwork and stuff, because we have done not remasters of his artwork, but so they've got like the original paintings, for example, of Back to the Future, and then I've redone all the type and the logos and stuff to make it back into the movie poster. Because if you just get the original movie poster files from the film studios, they're usually not the best quality because they were done, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But if you get a brand new scan of the painting, you can bring it to life like it's not been brought to life before, really. Yeah. So that's kind of like really, it's just a real pleasure to do that kind of work for me. And then I do my own posters as well.
What's the movie you want to do the posters for the most?
What, like, that's coming out now or just in general?
Anything at all.
Done so many now. Ghostbusters. I've not done Ghostbusters. I'd go for Ghostbusters.
That'd be cool.
That's a white whale one, that, especially if you could get to do all the likenesses, because obviously when you do a movie poster that's new and you're doing likenesses, the actors have to sign off. And I can imagine that could be tricky. Sometimes it's tricky. A lot of the time it's not. They just go, yeah. You know, sometimes they go, no. Just depends on...
So what happens if someone says no? Do you have to go back?
You have to just change it. They'll give you feedback, say what they don't like about their own face, and then fix it.
How dare they? They're allowed to pop in on what they don't like about their own face.
The best feedback I ever had, years and years and years ago, really early on, I did some sort of Star Trek art pieces. And there was a Generations one, and it had Shatner on. And the feedback from his people or him was, it didn't look old enough. It should be older for that movie. And I'd sort of posterized him a little bit and made him like a little bit more heroic looking. And they were like, no, he's old.
How dare you try to make Captain Kirk heroic? You disgrace.
Because you do that. When you're making a poster, you do an idealized version of the person and you put them in a heroic light, especially if they're the hero. Or the villain, you would change and make them look more... It's a fine line between reality and not, I think.
Now, you've just done the Phantom Menace poster that we've all seen. It's absolutely glorious. Will you be doing Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith?
I don't know. I'm like willing to do them. It just depends whether they want me to do them. That's how it works. So they come to me and say, do you want to do the poster? And I go, yeah.
What a stupid question.
Of course I do.
So how long did the Phantom Menace poster take from start to finish?
That one started last November and then finished a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
But the artwork was finished before New Year, probably. And then it's lots of different versions, different sizes, different languages, different type treatments and all, because I classically a poster artist, so someone like Drew Struzan would literally just do the painting. Sometimes they would do what's called finishing, where a designer would have designed the layout, I don't know how, sketching or with photos, and then they would do finishing and just do the artwork. They wouldn't do any type. That's why a lot of the originals are just paintings. They don't have any of the type on it, and then a designer would put that on after. But I like to do it all, so I do the design, concept, and the finishing.
So I have to ask this. What is your favourite typeface?
I like Futura. I've always liked that one because that was Stanley Kubrick's.
Yeah.
But I also like ITC Avant-Garde at the moment. That's another good
one. If you're doing a new project, do you have a default go-to font?
Futura is the one that I would do as the sort of placeholder. Yeah. And then, like with the Star Trek stuff, Eurostyles come in quite a lot because that feels very Star Trek-y. So
Eurostyle is on everything. It's just quite funny. I mean, it's now on the side of police cars. I mean, it's mad. You look.
It's because it looks basically sci-fi. So with Star Trek, it just sort of fits in.
Yeah. But it is on everything. It's mad.
It is, yeah.
And Matt, what is your last choice for what you bring to the island with you?
I don't know.
It's as much. You've talked about it quite a lot.
No, he hasn't.
Give me a clue.
It's about a voyage.
The Star Trek Voyage Home?
Yes.
Yes.
That one. The one with the whales.
One with the bloody whales, yeah.
What particularly did you like about the Voyage Home?
It's the most entertaining one. I recently have showed it to my daughter. She's 6. She loved it. Well, I'd say she loved it. She watched all of it. And there's parts where she was, you know, because she's 6. So, but the bit that, you see, you don't even know with children, do you? But it's when Scotty says, humpbacked people. She was in stitches. She's just, and then after that, she just thought Scotty was the best and was just laughing at him. And I was just like, yeah, when I was a kid, I loved Scotty because he's just a funny guy. He's just awesome. So, you know, it's like there's that. It's just, and it's another accessible one, like First Contact. And it's just a real easy watch, that movie.
Favorite scene in the movie?
Humpback people.
Well, that's pretty good. I like the dinner scene with the pizza. Yeah. It's just like I only work in outspace, all that stuff. It's cool. Yeah, do you trust me implicitly? It's like, what are you doing? She orders the pizza and he just goes, I'll have that as well. He doesn't even know what it is, does he? He's got no idea what that food is.
What makes no sense is like replicators haven't been in existence in the 23rd century. So like they're used to eating normal things. So when he's looking at a pizza, you're going like, come on, Kirk, there's still a pizza in the 23rd century.
Apparently he's never had it.
Obviously not. Pizza doesn't exist in the 23rd century, obviously. Poor Italians.
Like in the Trouble with Tribbles, I think it is. He's showing, they're seeing how the Tribbles have infected everything. And he's getting his lunch with Spock. And he pulls out the tray and it's got Tribbles on it. And he says, this is my chicken sandwich and coffee. And we were going, you could have just ordered a chicken sandwich there, Kirk. I'm sure that restaurant had chicken sandwich. And when he drinks the alcoholic drink, then he's kind of there going.
He's like that. Mm. He has Romulan ale all the time. That's like the legit
the stuff. Strongest of the strongest stuff you're ever going to find. Yeah. Or the bluest of the bluest stuff you're ever going to find. Yeah.
Matt, if you had to, now I suppose I'll have to do a rundown of this course. If you had to pick only, basically if a fire suddenly broke out in the island and everything was getting burnt and you could only save one of your choices, which one would it be?
Fox brain.
Straight in. No messing. Straight in.
Keep me entertained.
Are we talking about the physical brain or the episode? I'm joking.
When you went down that road, Mike, originally, I saw Matt's look in his face. I was there going, he's never going to come back to this show ever again. So, Matt, in terms of then, say, as we're saying goodbye to and sending you off to the island, if you were to have to bring a book with you, in addition to the Nick Meyer choice of the collected works of Shakespeare and Sherlock Holmes, what book would you take? And this is, you didn't give us an answer to this, so this really is going to be a surprise when you tell us the answer.
I go for a Terry Pratchett book, like Guards or something, because they're like a warm blanket. Yep.
And what luxury item would you take with you?
What luxury item?
Yeah.
Yep.
What counts as a luxury item is like a toothbrush.
Chocolate,
a
luxury item. Vodka.
Anything. Anything at all.
Wacom tablet with Photoshop.
Well, no. I'll take the chance to not do any work. It'd be great. Luxury item. Well, I'd go for a Transformer or something. I'd go for an Optimus Prime.
So you could just keep building it over and over again for like the rest of the time.
Yeah.
How would you handle the isolation being on your own and not being around anybody? Would that be easy for you or would that be difficult for you?
I do it all the time. Anyway, I work down in a cave in my house. And I'm always by myself, seems like. I haven't got family. I would miss my family a lot. So I probably wouldn't cope. And very quickly, I would be just crazed individual.
This kind
Which
of
is probably why I've been a bit like this on this show, because I'm by myself quite a lot. So
the question is, like, obviously kind of leads into the last question, which is how resourceful are you? Like, if you had to survive on a desert island, like, could you do it? Like, could you...
I like to think... I could, and I could be like getting the coconuts and stuff, but no, I'd be dead. 2 days. No, you see, most people can survive for 3 days without food or water. 2 days. I'd probably slip on a rock or something and kill myself.
Mike, I bet you asked them. Because I can't wait to find out the answer to this last question, because it's going to be, whatever Matt picks, it's going to be glorious.
Oh, it is. So we ask this question of all of our guests. It's super simple, doesn't require any thought. But, Matt Ferguson, what does Star Trek mean to you?
Nice TV show. I like it. That's what it means to me. It's just something that I like. Yeah. It's nice to have things, isn't it? Like, if you think about it, somebody invented TV and then somebody went, yeah, let's have a TV show, Gene Roddenberry, in space. And they went, and Lucille Ball went, yeah, okay, here's some money. And then they made it. And then 60 years later, basically, it's still happening. And we get to have all of that. It's just a really nice thing, isn't it? That it exists.
Fantastic. So, Mike, I'll let you do the outro again.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Desert Island Trek. I have been your co-host, Mike Overton, joined by the wonderful Joseph Hurley and our incredible guest, Matt Ferguson. Until next time, live long and prosper.